Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we will talk to Michael Wilbon about LeBron signing with Philly and also about Jackson Coivin winning the 3M Open. We'll talk more about LeBron with Brian Windhorst. The socialite is with us. We're very thrilled about that. But first, commerce.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You and Alan know everybody. And you know Alan, and he knows you. It's wonderful.
By the way, right. Alan Bubis. I love Alan Bubis, man. I want to be Alan Bubis.
Well, like,
what did you say?
We all do.
That great line?
It's two questions.
Great, last time he has to answer. You gave me a great line. That's
yes.
What it was. What is it?
He has to answer two questions every day. Where am I playing, and what's for dinner? And that's it.
That's all.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
And as if Sands had magic, the socialite is with us today. Alan is here. Alan and I and Gary and Tom Williams, not related to Gary, played golf yesterday. I was bad, but I got better on the back.
Sure did.
I got better on the back. You have to talk into the microphone.
I don't be like George.
Yeah. Right? Like George. Or
yeah.
Nobody will hear you. You know where George is?
Ireland.
George is in Ireland. He's on a trip to Ireland with apparently some very good players.
Yeah,
like Jay Whitby. Who's a very good player.
A lot of guys.
I hope it's nice in Ireland. I hope so. So I had my Hewlett High School weekend over Thursday, Friday, Saturday. These are people I went to high school with.
Do you finally get the grill lit?
Oh, I have a grill problem. We had to light it with matches. The electric starter on the grill doesn't work. So I was going to try. There's a couple of things I need from a handyman service called Clever Craft. I saw a sign for it. But Stephen Pearsall said to me, if this doesn't start, it's very dangerous to light it by hand with matches. Did you have any problem with it when you were lighting it?
No, because I told you this. I replaced the battery, so there might be an issue with the terminal there. So if you unscrew it, you can see if it looks like there's some, battery acid that might be leaking out of it, or if it just looks like it needs to be cleaned up a little bit. Because again, the grill had not been used in years. But where you press the igniter, that is where you can screw it out and check to see if the battery's still in good shape.
Is there anything in my life with you that indicates to you that I can do that?
Love that you handed the phone your friend the phone just so I could help him get the grill lit.
Right, because I couldn't do it. And if I'm not going near battery acid, that doesn't sound good. That sounds like the end of my fingertips.
This sounds like you should just get a new grill.
No, I don't want battery acid. Anyway, so there were five guys that I went to high school with.
Yeah.
One of them I went to grade school with.
Did you get
with.
The season this, fries?
Hmm?
Did oh, we five what? Guys. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, we didn't go to Five Guys. I mean, I only went once to Five Guys. I've told this story. I didn't get any fries. And then I found out that's the greatest thing in the world. And it's endless.
It's an
design.
I didn't get any. I didn't get any. But I paid $14 for a junior cheeseburger, which seemed like a lot of money to me. Anyway, so these guys, Stephen Pearsall and Eddie Plutzer and Steven Sheinberg, who later became a dentist, Bobby Kandel and Richard Pollitt. And I go back longer with Richie than anybody because we went to elementary school together. They were here. We played three rounds of golf. At the end, even though I was not good, I shot 99, 99. And when I shoot 99, it's over 100. I'm just putting in 99. I can't put in over 100. But then in the last nine, I shot 43. So I played well in the last nine. And I made money. there is an accounting. Everybody plays each other head to head. Everybody shifts carts throughout the entire thing, and there's an accounting, and at the end I had won $75, but it all went to the lunch. The lunch was like $130 at Casapula's. Do you know Casapula's?
I do. It's
yeah,
great.
It's really nice. And then and Eddie just said, well, just throw all the money into the lunch. So I didn't get any money.
It's easy.
I mean, I didn't lose any money, which is okay, but I didn't win any money. But I had a wonderful time. I mean, I look forward to this every year. It's wonderful to be with them. And, we've lost some people already. Some people have passed on. So you always hope that the solid core group is there.
You've been doing this for what, like 10, 15 years?
I think it's about 15 years. I do.
What a great tradition.
Yeah, and everybody looks forward to it. But nobody wears a Hewlett hat like or anything like that. There's
Sing the school fight song?
No, we don't even know if we had a fight song. When we were there, our
Feature
nickname
your school?
No, that when we were there, that song was out. But When we were there, the nickname of our school was the Blue Jackets. Hewlett is H-E-W-L-E-T-T. It's named for George W. Hewlett, who was a famous general with the British Army during the Revolution.
He knew what side to be on.
Yes, and it's named for him. But we were the Blue Jackets, and then we became the Bulldogs. I don't know why. I mean, nobody sent me a note saying this
great
is why we're the
Bulldog.
Yes, and Michael, in Michael's house, it is a great day to be a Bulldog, but in my house, it's a little bit less. Anyway,
Bearcats wasn't available?
No, I had a really good time. Bearcats would have been available.
Was any of this group lucky enough to get into Binghamton?
Well, it depends on what you mean by lucky enough. Two of them went to Williams, so I don't think they were looking at Binghamton. I don't think Binghamton was part of it. And no, nobody else went to Binghamton. And in fact, I'm sure they spit on Binghamton, but I love Binghamton. I mean, and I got my bag. I got the Binghamton Bearcats bag. I wish the clubs in it were better or that I was better. I tried. I demoed two putters. Couldn't putt with either of them. It's not the putter. It's me. Mm. No, it's not the putter.
Too much movement.
All right. So let's talk about the Nats. Alan has now joined the text chain. So this is good. Did you? I thought they were going to lose last night. I thought the relievers were going to lose.
Because everybody was saying what an important game this was, and we had to win this game, and then all of a sudden you said, oh, no, not again.
This guy, Crook, K-R-O-O-K, you have to DFA him.
You cannot walk the first three batters in the bottom of the ninth.
No.
That's impossible.
That's a good rule.
So he walks the first three in the bottom of
You're
the ninth.
Crook, Captain Hook.
It's 10-4. It's 10-4. When the third one gets walked, I get on the text thing. I said, get this guy out of here. DFA him immediately tonight. Because now, you know, your base is loaded, nobody out, and you are one pitch away from a 10-9 game. Ugh. And then they bring in Beeter. I don't have a lot of confidence in Beeter because people will say, oh, well, the night before, he threw a perfect inning, three outs. Each ball was hit hard. Jacob Young almost had to go out of the ballpark to catch the first out in the ninth. Am I right, Michael? Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but then he saved the game. Well, is that technically
just
a save?
Just another series win.
They said it was a save because the
people on base?
No, the on deck hitter it would be the tying run. So yeah. Canada is a save.
Yeah. So that was just another series win, but a series win at home.
It's big.
Which they have not done.
Very big.
And Arizona is pretty much even with them in the wild card race.
Chances have gone up to about 10%. That's huge.
Well, the Marlins have lost 12 games in a row. I didn't expect that, right? And by the way, we're getting.
These first nine games back out of the break were huge, particularly when you think about how they start August, where they have I think eight in a row against the Braves and Phillies.
That's tough.
Yeah.
That is tough.
Big series at home, but you have the Warrior God tonight pitching.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, so it is, by the way, it is Max Scherzer's birthday today. I think he's like 42. He hasn't pitched in a while.
Yeah.
And he's the only person ever who, in order to get healthy, started playing the piano. What are you, Ludwig van Beethoven? I love Max Scherzer.
Sure.
But I can't, I want him to do well.
We were at the game the other night, and we were looking out into one of the parking lots where you used to have the Scherzer eyes, and you're like, you know, we miss Scherzer.
Yes. Yeah. I sort of thought he might come back for 1 year, but, I mean, Verlander has gone back to Detroit, right, for the last year?
That's right.
And Scherzer is, I think, second most active in wins behind Verlander.
Yes.
But nobody's getting 300 again.
No, I think Scherzer's, and I could be wrong, I think it's like 235, 245, something like that.
Yeah.
But not going to even get close to 300.
No, well, he doesn't pitch anymore.
Going back to these first three series back from the break, you just think about what that does for their interest in selling or, you know, keeping players when you think about yesterday's performance by one James Wood and C.J. Abrams, two home runs each.
Now, those names are mentioned. I would never trade Wood. You could convince me on some level to trade Abrams if you convince me that the kid they drafted number one last year, a shortstop, can walk in and play that position. But C.J. Abrams is having the best year of his career, and I don't know that you want to trade him. Now, they just traded. Alan, what did you think? They traded Curtis Meade. They picked up a potentially a very, very good left-handed pitcher who is unfortunately on the injured list at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the first time in a few years that they traded for someone who will actually be on the major league roster now and ready to pitch, if assuming he's healthy. But when you think about being able to get, I don't think he's an ace, but a second or third starter for Curtis Mead, I think you got to take it. It's a good trade even for this year, and I think it's a great trade for the future.
If you look at it, if you say to yourself, Curtis Mead has bounced around, he's never been a starter, he's hitting great right now, but maybe he's Joey Meneses. Maybe he has this one spike and then he doesn't give it to you again, so you can get rid of him. Although, Michael, you lose the home run call. What is the home run call that Coco
See
has?
See you later, mate. Yeah. That's the first time you we got a text from Dan Coco. We sent him the video of the boys doing their call. You know what? What's amazing about kids? They're still going to do it.
Oh, yeah. They'll say, see you later, mate. They'll do that. Sure. So maybe it's a good thing, unless I'll give you the magic name, Josiah Gray. He hasn't pitched in 3 years.
Yes.
You know, he was a very promising pitcher who made the All-Star team and hasn't pitched since. That's like, that makes Strasburg look like a workhorse. But he hasn't pitched.
But see, which is the guy that used to work for the Red Sox with your organization? Is it the general manager?
Toboney.
Paul Toboney.
Yeah.
Paul
Toboney.
So he knows. He drafted. He helped draft this guy. So he's sort of got the inside hand on these blokes.
Everyone who analyzes this trade objectively says it's a win for the Nats.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. But it also...
Okay. But then you were very happy to see Brady House get like an RBI double yesterday late in the game just to
because
feel better.
I don't want Tania or Vivas at third base on a regular basis. What Mead did for you was give you a first baseman and a third baseman. So Shaputzva didn't have to get out there all the time. And Tania and Vivas didn't have to get out there all the time. You know, but now it's all on Brady House. And how many times have they sent him down already, Michael?
Can't pull
two
it
or
up.
Three.
No, I only think it's a couple.
Two yeah,
yeah.
Do you know? And he was promising. Hassel was promising. They DFA'd Hassel about a month ago. You don't know. Dylan Cruz was the overall number two pick in the draft, and every time he gets a hit, you go, "Oh, well, maybe now." And then he, strikes out or something. He's batting like .220.
Yeah,
but you hope.
But maybe now.
Maybe now.
Maybe.
So what you're saying
Pretty
about somebody
that one time.
Just once? Okay.
Yeah.
What you're saying, Alan, about the bringing in somebody who can be on the active roster right now, is that an indication to you that the team is either A, willing to spend money, or B, not going to unload because they think they have a chance at the playoffs?
You know, I think they're not sure. I think that's a great question. This happened to be a unique trade of being able to get a guy like this. So if I had a bet, I still think they're probably sellers for the future, because even if you make the playoffs and you lose two straight, but it's only, like we said, a 10% chance. So if I had a bet, they're still sellers, for the right price. You're not going to get anybody if they don't think they're standouts. And I think these guys, especially if it was Abrams or Garcia, you're going to get people ready to play in the majors.
I can see trading Garcia. Garcia is a very good professional hitter, who's not the greatest defensive guy at first base, but can help a team in need of hitting. He's a very good hitter. I would be tremendously disappointed if they traded Abrams.
Agree.
I can't even imagine trading Wood. I can't even imagine it. He gets up there and hits at 450 feet.
I haven't heard anything about Wood being traded.
Right. I mean, you do, and he's local. He's local. Didn't he go to Bullis for a while? Something like that?
I do know he's from Olney, because that made the telecast the other day.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think he went to...
You mentioned Garcia. I could see that happening as well, but if you watch the dugout, he seems to have a big role in that far corner of just keeping everyone happy.
He is a fabulous team guy. When someone hits a home run, Garcia hugs him. He's the last one they go to, and that is the obvious tradition in that lock, clubhouse area, dugout area. Yes, I think you miss a lot if you get rid of him, but he can bring you something because he's gotten hot at the right time.
Your issue with Wood is he's a Boris client. Abrams is.
Oh,
not.
He is?
Yes. So.
Oh.
So it's not going to be this year, but who knows, 2 or 3 years from now, or how many years he has under control. But
Scott Boris is the devil.
I'm sure he'll be reasonable to deal with.
No, he's never reasonable. He's the devil. That the next CBA should say you have to go to the NBA or the NFL.
No,
you can't do this anymore. All right, we will take a break. When we come back, Michael Wilbon will tell us, you know, why the LeBron going to Philadelphia is not good, because now the Eastern Conference is too good. This is his new position, I believe, although it could change. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The other day we played two songs by Philip Martin. Very intriguing titles, if I recall correctly. They had to do with baseball, right? Wes Parker in Paris and Richie Allen Weeps. This one is, I would never, ever have conceived of a song entitled, This is Another Song About Sylvia Plath. Okay? You know, I mean, Sylvia Plath, really? That's... But he's a very good singer.
He's outstanding.
Philip Martin is really
And working
good.
On a novel now.
Yeah, and this is plays in Michael Wilbon. And let us get to the thing. We were off. We had no show on Friday when LeBron James in the morning announced that he was going to go to the Philadelphia 76ers. So we could not comment on it. We will obviously comment on it today. What were your thoughts? I mean, you know that I had said on the air I thought he would go to Philadelphia. I don't know that you thought that. What were your thoughts when you heard he had signed with the Sixers?
You know, Tony, I didn't have really any idea where I thought he would go. You know, Philadelphia certainly became the place that if you were going to play and want to try to go after it, Philadelphia would be the place, because of trading for Jaylen Brown, mm-hmm. that you would go, in the maturation of Tyrese Maxey. That, I mean, you know, that's where you're going to go. And so that's what LeBron wants to do. It didn't have anything to do with just personal happiness or, you know, any of that. He wanted to play on this with this kind of outfit, and they're giving him that opportunity. That's not the case in Miami, where that roster would not have been as formidable as this one. And it wasn't the case at Golden State, where it would have been what I wanted to see, mm-hmm. but not, you know, not a real chance to win. Philadelphia gives him a chance to win, and so it was a wow. This is what LeBron does. I mean, he has, you know, had these hookups with people that, you know, with great players, and, you know, they've been able to, at least in Miami, to certainly win. When he went back to Cleveland, he was the driving force there, and Kyrie Irving was certainly capable, but this is more in the line of Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. And look, do I think they're the favorites in the East? No. That would be the New York Knicks. Do I think they're going to be able to rattle off 70 wins? No. Because teams like bottom feeders the last few years, like Washington and Chicago, you're not going to be able to just go in and beat them anymore. You got four games against them in the East, you're going to win three automatically or all four? No. And then Detroit and Cleveland and Atlanta. You know, the East has changed. It changed now. And so even though LeBron went there, and certainly that avoids San Antonio and Oklahoma City, the two best teams in the league other than the Knicks, the East is like 10 teams deep. I didn't mention Orlando. You know, they're 10 teams that you're going to have to beat them. And so I don't believe that Philadelphia is going to be great instantly. Even the teams with LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, those guys played, each one of those guys played 76 games the first season they got together. And LeBron was, of course, at his physical best then, and none of these guys is Dwayne Wade, and they still couldn't win that first year. So I think that, you know, people who are crowning them already and handing them, just add water and hand them the Larry O'Brien trophy, I think that's foolish, but I can't wait to see this. I think it's going to provide just great fodder for stories all year long in the Eastern Conference. I didn't mention Boston. But there's a lot of teams in the East, but they're going to be right there with the Knicks at the top of that conference.
You believe the Eastern Conference is now tougher than the Western Conference, correct?
Yeah, because who's the third team in the West?
Denver?
No.
Minnesota?
Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. Minnesota's a play-in team. Minnesota traded their second most important player. And I don't believe in LaMelo Ball. I mean, I know Minnesota must. I don't. And Denver, no. Denver's been falling. Denver was like a 6 seed last year. Their roster hadn't gotten any better. And so, no, Denver's not a threat. Minnesota's not a threat. There's two threats in the West. They happen to be the two best teams. But after that, I mean, Houston, Phoenix could be the third best team in the West. I the Lakers, every one of those teams got worse. So I understand avoiding San Antonio and
Oklahoma
OKC.
City.
Yeah. But the Knicks, not those two, the Knicks are the champions. And I think if you're anything, I'm looking at the Knicks thinking, okay, I mean, this is a direct challenge to you. And so let's go.
Where did you think he would go?
I had no idea. I had no idea. I've been talking to people who had no idea. There were people as late as, I don't know, late in the week who thought, he could still go to Golden State. There were people who thought he could go back to Miami because of Pat Riley, and he's been there already. I had no idea. I knew it wouldn't be Minnesota. That didn't make any sense. But
okay.
The other three places seemed pretty... Oh, Cleveland. You can go back home.
Right.
So he could have. And in talking to people, I realized that nobody had really any idea where he was going.
Do you see any particular drawback in going to Philadelphia, or do you look at it and say, yes, this makes all the sense in the world now?
It makes all the sense in the world now. Look, the thing is, Philadelphia is a tough place to play. LeBron's never been booed. He's never been gone after locally by the people who live there. He's never had the people who live there not even use their tickets to go see a playoff game he was in. He doesn't know anything about playing in a place like Philadelphia. He didn't know about what South Philly's like and whether people like him or not for whatever reasons they may or not. He didn't know jack about that. And so if he thinks, and I don't know what he thinks, but if he thinks they're going to change because he's LeBron James, sorry, they're not. It's Philly. And it's the most hostile, most difficult place to play, in my opinion, in the country.
He's chasing Jordan, right? I mean, my feeling is he goes to Philadelphia because if he goes back to Miami and wins there, he's already won there. One of the things he can say that differentiates him from Jordan if he wins is, I've won in four different franchises. Nobody else has ever done that. That's the credential, yeah. Right?
Yeah. That's what he's looking at when you uproot and go for a couple of years to Philly. Across the country to a place you've never been, a place that's particularly difficult to play and be accepted. And you do that at 42 years old. I mean, that's what you're doing. And so there's no secret in this to me. That's what LeBron has done. He's already done it. He did it when he went to the Lakers 8 years ago. So yeah, this is what he does. He's got, I don't know. If the crew of people around him functioned as largely an amen chorus, that might have been the case when he was younger, maybe not now. I don't know how much pushback he might have gotten from doing this and doing something else. But there's no question, Tony, that of the four situations that he apparently could have walked into, Philadelphia was the one that presents the best opportunity to win.
Has he been in Los Angeles for 8 years?
Yeah, 19 was his first season there.
He was. That's not very productive at all. One championship in the bubble. Wow.
I didn't
realize that.
I mean, people counting this as a championship year already, which I hear a lot of on our network and others, they need to just pay attention, actually, to history.
Now,
it's the league's history or LeBron's own, it's hard to win the title.
Yeah. Let's get off this and go to the most exciting thing that actually happened yesterday. Jackson Koivun winning the 3M. Tell people who he is, because you know.
No, I don't know. I spent some time just going, who the hell is this kid on Friday or Saturday or both? And he's a 21-year-old kid from Auburn. He turned professional, I think, 24 days ago. And
It was his third start on tour.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's not just that he's 21. He's three times the SEC golfer of the year.
That's a big deal. That's the best golf.
At Auburn. And So he's a great young player. You know, I'd heard his name before, somebody who pays attention to NCAA golf, because I pay attention to the whole thing through my team, through Northwestern, and is a threat to, you know, to be in the tournament, and, you know, certainly multiple Big Ten championships. We're not the SEC, but, you know, so you hear, I'm aware of the names, and I was aware of this kid, but I didn't, you know, and I saw him have a great round Friday. I was like, who is this kid? Let me remind myself of who he is. And he won all the awards, as in all of them, as in the only person I've heard of to win this many awards as a college golfer were Eldrick Woods.
And no, he had no bogeys yesterday. He finished it off with a 14-foot putt. He's going to win anyway. A 14-foot putt that goes in. You and I talked about this yesterday, and I'm going to ask you the question on the air. If you're Scottie Scheffler and you finish 63 on Sunday and you are minus 22, you can't ever think you're not going to win, right? You have to assume, oh, I'm going to win that one, right?
Yeah. And that's not my thought. Yes. You and I talked about this in the last time.
Yeah.
But my thought is, Scottie Scheffler better hope this is not 1997. And there's some 21-year-old dude who's the guy from Georgia Tech who was so great at the time and hurt his back and is on TV now. And
David Duval?
David Duval? You better hope you're not okay. David Duval. That's my thought. Okay? Because this kid, to me, if I'm looking at Scottie Scheffler's swing and athleticism and all the things that make up a great athlete and great golfer, and I'm looking at Koivu, I'm sorry, it ain't Scottie Scheffler. And I know Scottie Scheffler has proven, so is David Duval. Now, David Duval hadn't proven himself to the extent that Scheffler has, but David Duval was one, he'd won a major, and he and all the other dudes out there in 97 wound up looking up the leaderboard for the rest of their lives.
That's right. Okay? That's right.
So Scottie Scheffler, who I really have come to like, because Scottie Scheffler says to people when they get crazy and overhyped, as all golf talk does, Scottie Scheffler says right away, stop. Please stop. I really come to respect Scottie Scheffler. But here's what Scottie Scheffler also is. He is way overstated. It's overstated how great Scottie Scheffler is. I mean, you know, every few years somebody comes along and they're hot for 2 or 3 years, and then they're not Tiger. The question is this kid going to be that good? It's going to take some time to find out. We're not going to find out, you know, even in April or May.
It's 10 years. It's 10 years.
No, if you want to get, it doesn't take that long to find out if he's got greatness in him.
Yeah, but if you want to chase Tiger, it's a 10-year process of winning. Not 3 years, maybe more.
I'm not talking about him chasing Tiger. I'm talking about them chasing him.
Right, okay. That's
right. I'm not talking about him chasing Tiger. I'm saying that if I got to go with a young gun, and then there's a lot of young players coming out right now, and the SEC's got a few of them, Big Ten's got a few of them, but if I got to look at a player right now, just looking at it, just trying to play scout, I'll take this kid. Let's see everybody. Let's see if they can hold him off. That's what I'm talking about.
It was nice to see his father there. And nice to later learn that he started out on a 9-hole golf course and just fell in love with golf at a local
in San Jose.
Not private.
And in California, it's harder unless if you're not a rich person.
Right.
You know, it's harder to join a private club and afford the kinds of lessons that people do in most of these cases. And they moved across the country.
Did they ever explain
what to do with that?
He's in Chapel Hill. The family lives in Chapel Hill. Was that ever explained? Yeah. I mean, they
moved to Chapel Hill. They didn't explain whether or not the father had a job there and needed to go there or not. But they moved to Chapel Hill. And from Chapel Hill, he started being recruited by the world and winds up in Auburn.
Huh. Where, by the way, the SEC schools are really good at golf. Georgia is usually the best, but Auburn is certain. LSU and Auburn, Florida, they're there all the time.
Vandy. They're all good. They're all good. They're the best. And this kid's the best of that.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm not going to get overhyped. I just want to see it. But just in look, Tony, there are times you and I have watched athletes at 15 and 16 and 18 years old, and you're just like, oh, yeah, this kid's got it. Now let's see if he can cash it in. This kid, to me, has the potential for that. Now, let's see if he can follow up that college career with anything remotely resembling that in the pros.
Well, he got to 70th, so he would qualify right now for the Tour Championship. Now he'd have to.
70th now.
He'd have to do great. Yeah, that's it's a cut as it's 70, and if you're at 70, you're going to have to finish like top 10 to go to the next week. But we'll see. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Yeah. All right, so
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we will take a break, and Brian Windhorst will join us. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a band called Anhedonia, Anhedonia.
No, it's flipped. They're called The Morning Line, aren't they?
Oh, okay, that's the song.
Yes.
The Morning Line is the band.
Yes.
The Morning Line is something I understand because it's a horse racing term.
Right.
Anhedonia, when I was in college, was a very popular word for English majors. We'll get to it later. Yes, The Morning Line is playing this. This is our friends at Big Stir Records send us this
another great song, yeah.
Michael, if bands like The Morning Line want to get on the show, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And they play in Brian. Brian Windhorst, who is in tremendous demand by every talk show in the world right now because somebody whose high school he attended, though earlier than LeBron, right? You're older than LeBron by a little bit, aren't you? Or were you
yes,
in high
but
school?
I feel like I have less gray.
Right, right. But you never crossed paths in high school. You were earlier than him.
No, 7 years older. At my senior year, our basketball team was 3-17. It was slightly different. LeBron's years. Yeah.
But
there was a bit of a turnaround that took place.
You followed him your whole reporting life. You know all about him. You know more than anyone else about him. I'm going to ask the questions that I think any curious person would ask in no particular order, but they're curiosity questions. In your opinion, who were the last two or three teams that he was looking at when he ultimately chose Philadelphia?
In my opinion, based on my conversations, and let's just say that only LeBron truly knows. So anybody can claim whatever they want, and I can't prove them wrong, okay?
Right.
In my opinion, it was between Miami and Philadelphia.
Not Cleveland, not Golden State, in your opinion?
Not in my opinion. And, you know, I think if you looked at the way Pat Riley conducted himself last week, he thought he was getting him. And I don't say that critically. You know, Pat was doing those interviews, went on Levitard. He was seeding the ground, or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
He thought he was a really good chance that LeBron was coming.
Why do you think ultimately he chose Philadelphia?
Only he can answer that question. But I think let's look at what his statement said. And by the way, I just want to say, this is not critical. This is an outrageous situation. You know, just the concept of a player in this stage of his life and his career being willing to do this. It's really a complete one-off in the history of the sport. Okay, let's just have that as the ground understanding. He said he didn't care about money and didn't care about family. Now, just think of that sentence. Like, he said that. He posted that. I saw it read 100 times on various, outlets, and people just move past it like pro forma. But just think about that. Think of any decision that you would ever make in your life, and you were like, yeah, it's not about money, it's not about family. Oh, okay. It sort of just changes all the ground rules. And so when you understand that someone makes a decision based on that, and not only that, it seems, and I don't want to get ahead of myself because LeBron has not said this thing, but I don't think he even really intends to live full time in Philadelphia.
I heard he was going to live in New York.
Yeah. So just think of the one-off nature of this. I know everybody's been like gripping so hard and saying, where is it going to be? Where is it going to be? just take a step back and realize the inanity of the way this is playing out. And really, if you're a Knicks fan, think of how bizarre this is, that for a good, what do you want to say, Tony, 15 years, the Knicks fans dreamed of having LeBron James, of having him. And now LeBron actually wants to live in New York, and the Knicks are not interested. Rich Paul said, this is not a source that said, Rich Paul said on the record that he called the Knicks. He said that like 20-something teams called him. The Knicks apparently were not one of them. He called the Knicks, his old boss, Leon Rose, who he had a big breakup with. That's why he started his agency. And said, hey, what do you think about LeBron? And the Knicks passed. It's a pretty crazy set of circumstances.
I wouldn't have bet on that. The one thing I would have bet on is if he was interested in Philadelphia, that he, not Rich Paul, not anyone else, he would have had to have a conversation with Joel Embiid.
Well, he did. Saying, he had multiple.
Right. Saying he had to become convinced that Joel Embiid would play at least 50 to 60 games. Don't you think? You agree with
but
that.
But how could you say, like, who convinces him? Joel Embiid? Like, yes. You know, Tony, how can he promise that? He's played less than 40 games for three straight years.
Yes. I'm just saying they had to have these conversations, and LeBron had to come away optimistic.
Yeah.
All right, optimistic. How long do you think?
Why would he be optimistic? it's crazy.
Because you delude yourself into thinking that even though it's never happened in the past 5 years, suddenly Joel Embiid will be good with you.
These are not stupid people, so that's why it's just outrageous. Okay.
How long do you think he knew he wanted to go to Philadelphia?
Only he can answer that. It would just be a sheer guess. But the fact that he waited 25 days illustrates that he didn't really know how this was going to go.
How much of an influence do you think Bob Myers was?
I think he helped. I think on the pie chart, he definitely was an influencer. And I think one of the things that you have with Bob is from the Warriors school of always thinking big. Yep. The Warriors always think big. And that's how you land Kevin Durant when you've already got three Hall of Famers on your roster. That's how you refit your team from one of the worst teams in the league to back to champion in 3 years. That's why the Warriors are still going after Giannis and Jaylen Brown and LeBron, even at this stage of Steph Curry's career. They always think big. 6 weeks ago, the Sixers were, an also-ran. And they had no cap space and, a couple of assets, but not really what you would consider attractive tradable contracts. I mean, they're not trading VJ Edgecombe. And they land Jaylen Brown and LeBron James. And so Bob Myers is part of that always think big mentality.
Rich Paul seems to get bent out of shape when someone suggests that LeBron is chasing rings. He is chasing rings. There's nothing wrong with chasing rings. That's what he's doing. I mean, if he wasn't chasing rings, he could say, I want to play in Sacramento. He doesn't say that. He goes to a contender, right? Is he not chasing rings?
Yeah, because ring chasing is deemed to be sort of dirty. But let's look at LeBron's own words. He said he wants to win the championship now.
Yeah.
So, I think that's one of the things that was a bit against Miami in this, is that I don't think Miami, they could disagree with this, and I could be wrong, but I don't think Miami with LeBron had a team that you could look at and say, I think there's a real good shot at winning it this year. Philly has a lot of variables, sure, but you could look at that team and say they have a real shot of winning it this year, and clearly that was a factor for LeBron.
What do you think Brad Stevens is thinking right now? Well, I mean, it feels like the Celtics took themselves out of everything with this trade for this overrated, non-productive Paul George, who's 80 years old and costs a lot of money. What are they thinking now? This is the same conference, the same division, probably.
Well, I don't know what they're thinking, but I believe they still think they can probably win the East. And the big thing that undercuts the Celtics' move this summer, because you can defend it from various analytical views, and I'm not taking that position, Tony. I want to be clear. I am not defending the Celtics' decision here. But there is a analytics, as you know, there is an analytics-based argument for not paying Jaylen Brown $57 million. Like, that is not indefensible. It is unpopular and it is controversial, but is not indefensible. But the argument loses its edge when you compute that Paul George is not a $50 million player in the least. Jaylen Brown, it's somewhat of an argument, debate, philosophical thing. Paul George is clearly a vastly overplayed, high-level role player at this point in his career. And the Celtics' contention is that our style of play plus the draft capital that we got is going to ultimately win in the long run. And I think they probably still believe that. But there's an irony here. When the Milwaukee Bucks traded for Damian Lillard, there was a hellacious boomerang effect that they could not have predicted. Or if they did, they thought it was a low chance. And that's that when they traded Drew Holiday to get him, that he was going to end up on the team that they had to play against in the playoffs. That the guy that they acquired, Dame Lillard, they provided their biggest rival with the antidote to deal with him. And this isn't exactly a replica situation, but the controversial decision to trade Jaylen Brown is one thing. To trade Jaylen Brown within your division, I know divisions don't matter, but clearly there's historic rivalry there. To trade him within your division, and then it boomerang and enable them to get LeBron and definitely knock you down a peg. Maybe you believe you can beat him 4 out of 7. Maybe you believe your style can outwit them or whatever. But it definitely knocked them down a peg. And, you know, they are now going to have to try to win this one likely in the long run as opposed to the short run.
Do you think LeBron will try to fire Nick Nurse?
I don't think so, because Nick Nurse is represented by Clutch Sports.
Oh, okay.
And that's a factor in this. But I do not believe that LeBron is the challenge here. I believe the challenge is Jaylen Brown. Because we've got Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey openly recruiting LeBron. Multiple conversations where they're talking. You know, it was their team. They're basically saying, I want to give this share to LeBron. Let's figure this out. Jaylen Brown did not choose this.
He was traded. Yeah, he was traded.
And not only that, but he's, you know, it's not like Tyrese Maxey is going to say, okay, to make this all work, I'm going to play center. He's going to be the point guard. I mean, the ball, you know, maybe in his hands a little bit less or whatever. He's going to be the point guard. Joel Embiid's going to be the center. You know, LeBron will have to maneuver, but LeBron accepted that. He comes in maneuvering. Jaylen Brown goes from a year where he declared himself the best two-way player in the league and thought he was the MVP to, like, too, trying to find this out. So, and like, he's the guy with $150 million or $170, whatever it is, over the next 3 years that the Sixers are hugely heavily invested. The Sixers don't have an investment in LeBron. It's a minimum salary. It's a pittance. So what Nick Nurse is going to have to figure out here, and what's going to be vital for the, because, like, look, Jaylen Brown has to play a bigger role than LeBron. Let's just be honest. If the Sixers are going to go where they need to go, Jaylen Brown's got to be this two-way force. This is really a question of how to get the most out of Jay. I don't see anybody talking about that. But to me, that's the challenge. How do you get Jaylen Brown into a role that he's comfortable with and invested in a situation he did not choose?
That's very interesting, because he made it very clear that his best year was the year when Jason Tatum wasn't on the court, which is him saying, really,
his,
you like that guy ahead of me?
What he said.
His favorite,
his
whatever
favorite
it is.
Year.
Yeah. I mean, where he didn't have to do anything like that. I'll get you out on this. And it's because of Kawhi Leonard, do you think there's any possibility of something shady happening in the future with LeBron and the Sixers, like buying a piece of the team at a discounted rate? Do you think there are any promises made beyond, we're going to put you on the court in this year and maybe next?
Well, all I can say to that, first off, I have no idea what LeBron's conversations are outside what I've, you know, been able to glean. Like, how can I possibly know? But I will say,
just because we like you, we like to ask you questions.
I appreciate that. Nice. Let me just say two things about that. Number one, I honestly believe, and they could all be lying to me, Tony, and I can't prove it different. I honestly believe the Sixers did not see this coming up to 24 hours. I shouldn't say didn't see it coming. Didn't think they were winning this sweepstake. They thought they were going to finish on the outside. And by the way, I talked to them and their folks throughout the process. I was in Vegas several days before, saw Nick Nurse in Vegas, saw Bob Myers in Vegas. They did not think they were getting him. So if they had some like secret backroom deal to buy 5% of the Commanders for $1 million in 5 years, like they certainly did not see it coming. All right. That's number one. So this would have had to have been a hell of a deal that was negotiated in the final hours.
Right.
The second thing is, I don't know what's going to happen with the Clippers, but I know that going forward, especially in the short term here, there's going to be a very heightened awareness focused on these types of any sort of side deal. So, and by the way, you can't secretly sell a share of an NBA, of an NFL team. You know, you may be able to give somebody a secret share of a coffee house or some other thing, but you know, all of the teams that Josh Harris owns, everybody, you can't do a deal without anybody else knowing. So the chances of there being like some sort of equity deal with a team, I think, are unlikely. That said, it is not a bad idea to be in business with Josh Harris if you want to be in the sports business when your career is over. It's not a bad idea to foster that relationship. But do I think there was a quid pro quo? I think that's unlikely. I, of course, cannot prove it, but I think it's unlikely.
All right, you have to do about 14 hours of television, so go do it. Thank you, Brian. We'll see you later on PTI.
Have a great day, Tony. Bye-bye.
Brian Windhorst, boys and girls. We will come back. Email and jingle, right?
That's right.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony.
That is the Cane Bay, South Carolina High School Choir.
Yes, I would think that everyone that sang in that has now graduated from college as well.
I would think so. We've had it for a while. You want to do the lovely Bethesda Bagel ad?
Oh, yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in, and you'll be thrilled. I want to say a quick word. Neil Ervase has reached out to us. I want to let people know that the Denver area Littles in Colorado Summer of Littles event is this Saturday, August 1st, starting at 3 p.m. at the Golden Mill. That's 1012 Ford Street in Golden, Colorado.
That's lovely. We like Neil.
Yes,
Neil writes all.
Much so.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, I saw her today at the reception, a glass of wine in her hand. I knew she was going to meet her connection, that her feet was a footloose man. You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need. That was sung famously by Michael Philip Jagger. I need some water. And Michael Philip Jagger yesterday turned 83 years old. 83.
Still going strong.
Seems to be. Thanks to our guests today, Michael Wilbon and Brian Windhorst. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple, please leave us a review. We have a, what is this thing here? A birthday present. Oh, yeah, let me thank Sean Bach from Jenny's.
From Jenny's.
Who delivered a whole bunch of ice cream. And it's mostly from Michael's children.
Yeah.
Because there's no coffee or chocolate. And it's schmutz. But kids love that stuff.
Kids love it. They love Jenny's.
They've been so nice. Michael's got a whole bunch of ice cream, right?
Love it, yes. Boys are happy, as always, to try the different flavors. And we've set aside your special ice cream, the coffee and the darkest chocolate.
I thought they said they didn't do that. They didn't bring it.
No. There is some for you as well. I just want to point it out.
Oh, look at that.
A haiku from Chad. Dearest Nationals, please no trade deadline selling for Kornheiser's sake. PJ Donnelly, Springfield, Virginia. I was very happy to hear Steve Sands is going to start getting residual checks for his appearance on the Hawk. He can finally fix the damage to his garage brought on by all of his son's driving adventures. From Paulie Coconuts, dear Dr. Potato Farmer and music aficionado, the link between the two bands, Strawberry Alarm Clock and Lynyrd Skynyrd, is Ed King. Ed was a founding member and lead guitarist of Strawberry Alarm Clock. He co-wrote the music for the number one hit Incense and Peppermints. He later became famous as a member of Southern rock legends Lynyrd Skynyrd, joined the band as a bassist, then moved to lead guitar to create Skynyrd's famous three guitar attack. Ed played on the first three albums, co-writing many iconic tracks, including one you may have heard of, a little song we like to call Sweet Home Alabama. Yes,
oh,
the most
yeah.
famous.
That's a great song.
From Roxy. This is more for Amy Boyd, an emailer from last Monday's show. No offense, but let me get this straight. You get to sip wine with David Spector, episode 13, travel to new places, use discount codes for Johnny O, and you want a divorce? Get in line, sister. Try doing a podcast for 400-plus episodes with him about these people's obsessions with Tony, and then we can talk. Love, Roxy. Isn't that nice?
That's funny. Great.
Who is this? This is from Dylan Garin.
Yes.
Steve the Sycophant wrote in on Tuesday's show promoting a free summer concert by the Main Street Community Band of Fairfax, Virginia. I spontaneously drove my two daughters and myself 25 minutes from Reston. It turned into one of the most wholesome and enjoyable nights my family has had all summer. Community Center was packed with the appropriate Tony Kornheiser demographic. The band was awesome, playing everything from the Beach Boys to Led Zeppelin and Paul Simon, even a piece featuring rubber chickens. After the rubber chicken piece, I thought it would be appropriate to yell La Cheeserie. My wife was mortified. After the concert, I thanked the conductor and told him Tony Kornheiser was the reason we were there. He looked confused until Steve the Sycophant stepped in, laughed, and said he appreciated La Cheeserie. We talked. We took a selfie. I got to thank him for the recommendation. And there are photos attached. The unexpected highlight came afterward. My 7-year-old and 5-year-old daughters took their concert programs and walked around asking every member of the band, from musicians in their mid-20s to those in their 80s, for an autograph. The musicians were a little confused, mostly flattered, couldn't have been nicer. My favorite John Prine song is Hello In There, about taking the time to see and appreciate older generations. Watching my daughter spend the evening with, applauding and asking for autographs from people 50, 60, and 70 years older than they are, I couldn't help but think it was a scene straight out of that song. So thanks to Steve the Sycophant. And tell Brian and Doug to eat it. They're Northern Virginia natives and should have been there, which is nice.
That's lovely. From
Tony Beeson. The journey of Flush the Mouse continues to be rewarding and fulfilling. Today, the woman to whom I'm related by marriage and I were able to donate copies of the children's book to Cincinnati Children's Hospital and the adjacent Ronald McDonald House. If this little book brings a smile to the face of even one sick child, it will truly be worth it. Isn't that nice?
That's just great.
Isn't that nice from Tony Beeson? From Mike Davis in Charlotte, North Carolina, the woman to whom I'm related by marriage brought home some potatoes from Publix. On the bag, it said they were good for baking, mashing, and frying. Thought you'd like to know in case you needed ideas for your upcoming harvest. No, I thought I would use them to play wiffle ball. That's what I thought. Kyle Caldwell in Edmonton, Alberta, in Canada. I agree that the Knickerbocker Theater collapse was the biggest collapse in D.C. history. That is, until one fateful night in May of 2017. Absolutely. Only a few days after the King of Game 6 stood atop the scorer's table celebrating his three-pointer to extend the series, the same King showed himself to be truly a fool as he went scoreless, shot 0 for 11 over the final 19 minutes. Now that is a collapse.
That is a...
Yes, it is.
It certainly
From Brett Hobbs, who is presently in Yellowstone National Park. I made it to Yellowstone, started my first week of work. Many, many tourists, but so far it is Fluffy Cows, a.k.a. Bison 1 and Tourist 0. I will send you score updates as they occur.
Don't get anywhere near the bison.
And from Steve Gilmore, now in Rising Star, Texas. Dear Potato Man, we had leftover bacon this morning. I was going to mail it to you. However, my two masculine golden retrievers wanted it more. Maybe next time. Get out on your bike tonight, everyone. As always, do wear white.
See you later, mate.
This is another song about Sylvia Plath. Well, I saw her name in a book, I saw a photograph. She was dirty blonde like Elvis, regular pretty too. I feel bad about what happened to her, you know I truly do. This is another song about Arthur Rimbo, to show you how much I can't guess and how little I know. He disappeared in Africa and emerged bourgeois, put on his daddy's fascist boots and moved to Arkansas. Everybody's got to die, that's what they say. If I gotta die, I I guess I'm gonna die someday. But I'm too old to burn out, so I guess I'll fight the slow decay. I'll not fade away. I'll not fade away. This is another song about Frank Stanford. Another dumb dashing cad who lived by the sword. When they asked him the one he loved best, he stapled a rose to his chest and went to his reward. This is another song about Kurt Cobain. Put a toe on a trigger, held a vigil in rain. His mama said not to join that stupid club. But life is just fear and pain, baby, that's a rub. Life is just fear and pain, baby, that's a rub. Everybody's got to die, that's what they say. If I gotta die, I guess I'm gonna die someday. But I'm too old to burn out, so I guess I'll fight the slow decay. I'm not fade away. I'm not fade away. I'm not fade away.
Sunrise, I pass a few bucks. I've had faith.